He is not Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin.
Good morning, Jill.
This is Car Keys. Good morning. All right. So I had sent around just a note. I think it appeared on a couple of not strictly automotive news sites that said that there was some difficulty at the moment with the, and I'm going to get this wrong, the Tesla, the mass market. Producing the mass market Teslas. Is that the correct way of...
There are huge issues with Tesla. And to be honest, I don't follow the Tesla story day by day.
So,
and so you can look at it from a financial point of view, and we know that historically they've been strapped for cash at times, and I don't know where they are this week or this month, but it's been an issue. And they are having production challenges, trying to put out a few cars of that famous Model 3 that they have a 500,000 orders for.
And it's the Model 3. Do the 500,000 orders come with down payments?
They do, with $1,000 each.
Okay, so...
Which are not, by the way, that was the little asterisk back when they were taking the orders. That $1,000 went in their quote-unquote general fund and not into an escrow account, which means that if you have $1,000 down payment with Tesla and something happens to Tesla, the corporation, you could
You've made a down payment on somebody else's something.
Yes, but I think most people are very well aware of that, and the people who put down a down payment did it for a reason and want to see that car come to market, and I guess are willing to wait as well, because I don't know that that many people have started asking,
"Where's my car?"
Where's my car? Yes, they're asking, "Where's my car?" But they're not, you know, they're not clamoring for refunds.
They're not outside the gates yet, saying, "Where's my
no.
car?" How long were they going to wait for those? I don't mean patient. Well, I just mean what was
the production was supposed to start late 2017, and by 2018 we should be well into a normal production mode, and I don't know what the numbers are, but if I recall, they were hoping to get at least 200,000 to 300,000 of those cars out by the end of 2018. Very unlikely to happen.
How many might they get out? Or what? And what I don't know, because I'm completely ignorant about making cars, is if you know,
it's a production challenge, I think once they get their ducks
up.
Set up, things will start moving at a faster pace. You know, it's like everything else that Elon Musk does. There's a lot of
excitement
that he builds up with these press conferences and presentations. He did it lately with his semi-truck. He does the same thing with SpaceX. The Model 3 is a great car, and as we know, we were going to talk in this show about the 2018 best cars or car of the year. Different magazines have different ways and different scenarios to come up with what they think
different
formulas, different tests,
and do they come
different
up with
criteria.
And then do they come up with different cars?
Some of the cars are the same, some of them are not. But to get back to Tesla, the Model 3 was certainly on the list of one of the cars to be a contender to car of the year at Motor Trend. And by the way, I was driving over and I can't remember what car was car of the year last year, which was is pretty pathetic on my part. But I do remember that the Tesla Model S was the 2013 car of the year. And so Motor Trend saw it right there, and there are quite a few Model S Teslas on the road, and there probably will be quite a few Model 3s. I don't think it's going to be a $30,000-$35,000 car. The cars that are making into the press fleets usually stick around $55,000-$60,000 car price tags for these cars. So it's going to be a great car. It's a sedan, which is not where the market is going, and it's going to be expensive. So
other than that, it's a fine. Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln.
Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, everything is fine.
Okay.
There are other manufacturers that are coming and going, and right now, and I was in preparing for this, talking about the best cars of 2018. I was reading about what the manufacturers are doing on a bigger scale, and what their product lines are, and who's on the up and up, and who's kind of struggling with their mission statement. And
do you ever get the idea that the manufacturers and the marketing departments don't speak? Because I'm just curious, because that's a little enlightened self-interest on my part. But I am sometimes, you know, if you are doing something car-wise, you have to be doing it several years out.
It's well, exactly. Now you're getting right to, you're feeding into my point. It's a long-term project. If you look at successful car manufacturers and, you know, historically, you look at, Mercedes-Benz since the 1950s. They started out not as a luxury brand. They started out making, quote-unquote, Panzer tanks, just extremely well-built cars, simple, well-built cars. And it took decades for them to build a reputation of
luxury
brand. In more recent times, you have brands like Hyundai. It would make Robin very happy. And it is. The Hyundai story is a great success.
Yeah, but I had a friend who bought a Hyundai right after they came out, in the early 80s.
Yeah.
And I remember driving it down Greenwich Street, sort of bouncing around on the cobblestones and going, right, tin can.
Yeah. That was then, this is now.
Uh-huh.
And these manufacturers have put a lot of effort into research and development, into production, and come out with great product that they've been improving year after year after year. And every model cycle, every model is an improvement over the previous model, which when you look at other established manufacturers is not always or necessarily the case.
Right, but it is something that one theoretically, if one goes to business, like on one's first day of business school, whether or not you're going for cars or widgets, the thrust is, okay, this is the product, and it's about maintaining and improving or evolving the product over time. And one of the things that I noticed 20-some-odd years ago when we became push this button and buy something, is that the whole sense of inventory management went away. And we now have an entire generation, except that...
And it gets me, I like to talk about how cars are sold, and I having lived in Europe for many years in the earlier part of my life, I compare how we buy cars here and how we how people buy cars in Europe. And in this country, each dealer has 100, 200 cars on the lot that were ordered months and months ago and that were produced months or weeks ago and have been sitting on lots waiting for people to come and buy them. And you basically walk on the lot and you get a blue one or a white one and this option or the other, but the car is on the lot and you drive away with one of the ones that is on the lot. In Europe, to this day, you order your car. 6 weeks later, you have your car. There may be a dozen cars in an average size dealership in inventory, maybe a bit more nowadays, but still, there are a couple examples of each model. And then you order your car and 6 weeks later, there it is. And you can have it optioned the way you want, the color you want it, with the seats the way you want them. And it's less of an impulsive
buy. It is more thought. It's also less good word impulsive, but it's also, do you have the price competition?
Sure, of course you have price competition.
You know how Robin goes from dealer to dealer to dealer.
Yes, and here it is. Well, and you can have that same competition for sure. I mean, especially if you're ordering the car,
How do you pre-do that? Do you go to several dealers and say, what?
Any dealer you want, you know, what within a brand, what and if you know what me? Car you want, and just, you know, you spec order it, and then you ask for the price, or.
So you spec order, ask for the price, then you go to another dealer, spec order, and ask for the price. And you go to another. Okay, no, but it's that sort of thing. I come from, without even being aware of it, because, again, I came to purchasing cars late, I had a more... The notion of ordering a car was what I was more used to, let's just say. What I found interesting, though, is the one time I did order a car, and Robin knows this story, and he always rolls his eyes, but I ordered a very specific... I ordered the thing. I ordered the color. I spent a lot of time.
And then there was a mistake somewhere along the line.
It wasn't a mistake.
That used to happen a lot.
It wasn't a mistake. It was a... It's like, well, this is what we have. Here's your car. And I basically said, that is purple. It wasn't. I was like, I had ordered, it was a Volvo. I had ordered that wonderful, there was a graphite. It was a beautiful gray. And they gave me a silver car. And they said, this is graphite. And I said, it isn't.
But okay, so you may think you have ordered the car, but most likely they just went back and search in inventories and dealers talk amongst themselves. And, you know, and.
Now, this was 30 years ago, so it's...
Yeah, but they still had access to what each dealer had in inventory, and dealers trade cars all the time. Now, of course, it's easier because we just go online, and we can find thousands of cars on Auto Trader or Cars.com, and we can spec them out ourselves. And actually, with the number of cars out there... You really don't, I mean, now I'm being my own devil's advocate, you don't really need to spec order a car. The chances are if you want a...
Something, you can find it.
You can find it. It's already out there.
Right. It's just a question of whether you want to have it.
It may be
but
a ways away.
Wait, but P.S. used to, another person I knew, sadly no longer with us, but he would order his Volvo, in fact, in Europe somewhere, and then he would... go there, and then they would drive it. And
European manufacturers have those international programs where you can you walk into a deal. At the time, back in the 80s and 90s, there was a huge gray market for European cars, and the price and that was linked
to the exchange rate.
And it was linked to the exchange rate between the dollar and whatever, you know, the Deutsche Mark, the currency. And so you could go to Europe back in the 80s and buy a car for almost half the price.
You can do that now. You can't now, but
you can't for all the EPA reasons. What you have, though, all these manufacturers have established programs of their own where you can go into a dealership, you know, a Mercedes or a BMW dealership, and take order of your car, take livery of your car at the factory, and then you fly out, and then you take a little couple-week tour of Europe with your U.S.-specced Mercedes or Audi or BMW or Porsche, and then you drive it to a port.
So you can buy a U.S.-specced vehicle that is built in another country.
Yep, absolutely.
Can you buy a other country-specced vehicle that is built in the U.S.? I'm just thinking about BMW, for example. I'm thinking of BMW, for example.
Yeah.
Which has a plant in North Carolina, something.
Yeah, one of the Carolinas.
One of the Carolinas.
South, I think.
Sorry.
South Carolina. I'm pretty sure.
Okay. Yeah. The point is that they're quite proud of their, you know, their existence and their facility.
And they ship those cars back to Europe, by the way.
Okay.
I'm being careful because... I'm not sure exactly which cars are or not, but I think all of the X5s, at least at some point in time that was true, were built in the U.S. and shipped back to Europe.
And then shipped back?
No. The U.S. cars stay here, okay, but the European cars...
That's what I was curious. So,
no, if you're buying a U.S.-built car, they're not going to ship it to Europe, and then you go and pick it up in Europe.
You'd be really surprised.
Yeah,
but I appreciate from a common sense standpoint you wouldn't do that. But then, you know, you just – okay. So are the standards, though – if you buy a car in Europe, just last question, are the standards – are the EPA standards, which – they don't have. Are the regulatory standards different in Europe?
They are. I mean, if you order that and it's X5. Mostly X. Well, the X5 is probably built here, so that's
what
I'm saying.
If you
order a car that's built in Europe, it's built to U.S. specs. I mean, it
but
is.
But what I'm talking about is if you are in Europe.
Yeah.
Let's just say.
Oh, and you're buying a
U.S. car.
They're European spec cars. You know, they'll have the dashboards with the kilometers and not the miles, and they'll have the lights that are Euro lights and all the Euro gizmos and, you know, fog lights that we don't have, although we have them on some cars and not others.
What's with that?
It's a great thing, except people leave them on all the time.
Is that
now? Here we go on the rant. Okay, here we go on with our peeves.
No. But for me, I loved. I had a Volvo that actually had the fog lights that worked, and I thought they were terrific.
You're talking about rear fog lights.
I'm talking about front and rear fog.
A lot of cars now have front fog lights.
But
right?
It made life driving in the fog by the Housatonic. P.S. For me, I thought it was terrific. But we were talking to Robin, I don't know, a few shows ago, and he went off on a fog light.
He probably doesn't have them, that's why.
Tirade that, you know, and that nobody used it. They were absolutely pointless. I was like, well, no, actually.
They're not pointless.
They're wonderful.
What is really of value is the rear fog lights. And it's usually norm is to have one light on the left side of the car, and it's a very powerful red light. It helps see the car in the fog and in heavy rain.
Yeah.
Or in snowstorms.
But we don't have that here because?
I cannot figure that one out. And most European cars have them. Audis, Mercedes, BMWs have them. But I have a German-built Volkswagen, and it doesn't have the fog light, the rear fog light. And I don't know why. And it makes sense. It's not part of the U.S. specs. So Volkswagen did not put the rear fog light on the Touareg. The problem with the rear fog light is people have no clue that the fog light is on. And usually on these German brands, the light knob is on the left side of the dash, and you turn it one way or the other, and then you pull out.
You pull it out, pull it down, or go to the left.
Correct.
Right, and that's just too hard for the American consumer.
And now you have fog lights, rear fog lights on all the time and just blinding people and, you know.
Yeah. So it becomes easier again. We never quite got to where we were going before the show in terms of, okay, now how is this then mass-produced for the audience that it is meant for? And what I was about, and we were talking about Tesla and, okay, what would happen if, and basically, well, Jay said someone can come along and buy it. And this was my question. Are you with me?
Yep.
Okay. This was my question because it happens with, for example, specialty dog food all the time. You start a small brand and you are very careful with the sourced ingredients and you make a market.
You have a niche market.
And then somebody big comes along and buys it, which is fine, but that careful sourcing of ingredients can become a problem because if they don't have, I'm making it up, organic, but they are big enough to have bought you, then they are big enough to put whatever they want to in it.
Okay, so let's look at the back to the auto industry.
That's what I wanted to
know.
There
are a few brands and manufacturers that are doing really well. And one I think that is doing really well and has had the last couple of years new and very innovative and really cool product is Volvo. Volvo was an independent company until I think 1999, and then Ford owned it for 10 years. That went so well. That was when we had the Ford Premier Group, and they were buying every brand they could get their hands on. And the end result, it did not work so well. And then Ford sold Volvo to, and I never know if it's pronounced Geely or Geely, but big Chinese auto manufacturer. And let's not forget that China is the biggest auto market in the world now. The U.S. no longer is, but has left Volvo alone. Volvo is run out of, I forget their hometown in Sweden. And they've developed a very Swedish, Scandinavian products with a very strong identity, and they're doing very well. The XC90 is doing great. The new Volvo V90 wagon is awesome, and the XC60 is hitting the market right now. The new XC60, and it's a great car as well. So you can buy a brand and
not ruin it,
and not ruin it.
Or permit the identity to maintain.
Right.
It's really interesting because
it's just it's marketing and it's product now, and we can revisit this with Robin next week. But when I look at what Fiat has done with Chrysler Group, and they've become Fiat FCA, Fiat Chrysler Automotive. It's not such a successful story, and I honestly don't see it going anywhere. And what they've done is they've brought in a lot of Fiat technology into Jeep products.
They sort of possibly correct me if I'm wrong, but they rather did what Ford did with Volvo before it went back to.
Yes.
It's more, again, Scandinavian identity. And
yeah.
A lot of these marks were created,
There is an identity.
There was a reason, and that was part of the there was also a loyalty.
But that comes at a price. And there's a consolidation, as you mentioned a few minutes ago, in the auto industry. And it is very hard for independent manufacturers to be successful, financially successful. And this is where Tesla is going to run into and is running into problems. It's pretty amazing that it's gotten this far. Quite frankly, there is, in recent history, no other new car manufacturer that has
gotten as far as they have. So basically, you run up against the wall of the majors.
You run up against the wall of the majors, yes.
But in so many industries, I'm thinking about the recording. Back in the day, I'm thinking about the horse racing.
But the thing is, the majors have – it's become – they're all intertwined.
I mean,
it
– the majors
financially,
in a lot
the
of
– production, the research. I mean, Ford and GM have a common gearbox. Their 10-speed gearbox – I think it's a 10-speed – is a gearbox that you find in both Ford and GM products. It was inimaginable, even 10 or 15 years ago to see a product developed jointly by Ford and GM. It was one or the other, and you have an alliance. It's a limited alliance. It's on a gearbox. It's an important product, and then other manufacturers share platforms and share research, share engines.
Correct me. I thought that the platform share was more, for example, like VW, Audi. Porsche within their group.
Oh, and you can add Skoda in Europe.
And Skoda.
Skoda and
yeah.
A couple other brands.
Right, is it within the group? Because the gearbox, these bits, that's not within the group.
That's not within the group. I'm trying to think of a platform that's shared outside of the group. I can't think of
okay.
one. But it could be.
The car bits, the pieces
and
that
then,
go.
The group is not necessarily 100% the group.
No, group has all sorts of offshoots, but it's
20% a share in one company and 10 in another, and again, it's
right, and it's again the conglomerate with all the little bits. You know, when you look at the real ownership, and you find out, oh my goodness, four people own.
So,
but in this last minute, what do you so buttons? What was would you like to?
I think next week we talk about cars, and I had in mind today of talking about branding and car names and the relationship between car names and their market shares, and you have models like Volkswagen Golf. Toyota Corolla, I mean, names, Honda Civic, names of cars that have been around for decades. And I think there is a correlation between the length of time a name stays on the car and the success of a particular model.
Absolutely. And
then I see brands changing names all the time, and just people just wonder, what the heck are we talking about? And I'll get back to that case next week as we try to sort out the best cars of 2018.
He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.